The difference between an agent and a realtor is real. Realtors have the expertise to find exactly what you need and the ethics to do the right thing, even when it's the harder thing. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. That's who we are.
As long as I continue to make everything look pretty and shiny on the outside, I didn't care how miserable and ugly I felt on the inside. I realized that I deserved a better me, so I can be the wife and the mom that I really wanted to be.
If you're ready to get real about addiction treatment, call Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
And we're on, right, Javier?
We're on.
Okay, this is the Benzinga Cannabis Hour, the best hour for your cannabis news. And I am with Javier Haas, who has probably got his finger on cannabis news 24/7. I think even in your sleep, Javier, you're a cannabis expert.
I recommend you sleep 8 hours. I used to sleep less, and you know, it takes a toll. And I'm 30, you know, I can go on like for a party all night, but not for work.
Not
you
know, me.
You got it.
I used to be able to do that. I used to be able to do the all-nighters, not anymore. By the way, I'm Tony Noto. I am the cannabis editor of Benzinga.com. I'm with Javier Haas, who is the managing director of Benzinga.com. So we are very excited to bring you a jam-packed show with three amazing guests. How do you feel about today's show, Javier?
I think it'll be interesting, and it's a diverse show. We're touching on hiring, we're touching on extractions, we're touching on vertical integration. So yeah. You know, it's a little bit of everything. Should be interesting, should be fun, should be definitely educational and informative. So
yeah,
you know, can't wait.
I just might stick around for it. That's how good it's going to be. I'm not going to doze off.
Are you planning on not sticking around before I pitch it?
Eh, you never know. I mean, the debate's on tonight. I might need to run to the store, get some a little whiskey to be able to digest what I see tonight. What do you think? Are you going to watch the debate tonight? Do you get it down in Argentina?
Yeah, there's the internet. Like Chromecast or Roku or any of that. Where are your bets placed today? You know that like in Michigan, I heard some places are taking bets for the debate. I don't know if it's true or not, but
I don't know if I can stomach gambling on the fate of democracy, Javier.
My God.
I think
to vote from abroad, being in Argentina, but I'm an American citizen, and I tried to enroll, and it was a nightmare.
It's
not a great situation.
No, it's not. And but the exciting thing for tonight is I think for the first time in history, I could be wrong, but for the first time in history, there's going to be a mute button. So
I always thought they needed that and fact checkers. It's basic, like everywhere else in the world, they can mute you.
Yeah.
You know, after, but there's a limit to it. Maybe like a 10-second tolerance, but after that, it's like you won't shut up. Boom.
Fact checking. How come they don't do fact checking on these debates?
These guys, like the first presidential debate on both sides, they said several things that were clearly not true. And not a matter of opinion, because some facts are debatable, but some facts are facts, period.
Yeah. Also, they're really old. So old men usually get things wrong most of the time. They tend to, and that sounded ageist. I apologize to all those guys who are over the age of 75 out there who are listening.
No worries. Our guests today are very young and cool.
And they're very smart.
In the cannabis space. So, you know, our tell us about our first guest today, you know, Liso.
Is Liso the first guest?
Is she not? Yeah.
I think she is. Liso Bernard is the founder and CEO of the industry's premier cannabis staffing agency, Cannabiz. Liso, are you with us? We're waiting for her to boot up any second. And there she is. Welcome to the Benzinga Cannabis Hour, Liso. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for joining us.
Do I have any echo? Can you hear me okay?
There's a slight echo, but you know, this is Planet Zoom. So everybody out there is probably used to that sort of thing by now.
All right. Let me see if I can get my headphones on because that may make a difference.
Sure. I'll kill a little time talking about you. I mean, you have over 20 years experience, global executive search and placement experience. People need a job, they're going to come to you, especially in this up and coming industry that's just changing every single day. And especially now when there's an economic downturn, you're the person that everybody needs to hear from.
I think so. Yes, for sure. If you're looking for a job, and especially in the cannabis industry, that's what we focus on. I have a fantastic team, and it's really exciting to see that even during this downturn, you know, salaries are increasing in the cannabis industry, and there's a lot of jobs being created. So I feel very blessed to be part of this industry at this time.
Tell us a little bit about Cannabiz Team and Cannabiz Temp, you know, and what you do. And what you've been doing throughout the pandemic, because, you know, I know you've been thriving, not to gloat, you know, but the cannabis industry has been doing very well. And I assume hiring a lot more people, both, you know, for temporary jobs and for you know, full-time or part-time jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
Do tell.
Sure. So Cannabiz Team and Cannabiz Temp are two companies that focus on executive search and staffing for the cannabis industry. I spent most of my career in regular staffing. I worked for one of the world's largest staffing firms for over 20 years. And about 5 years ago, I realized that this is going to be an industry that's going to really need you know, staffing and employment and someone that can do it well. So I left a very secure job and founded the company. You know, it combined a lot of things that I was super passionate about. I love alternative health. I love, you know, natural products. But I also love working with people and finding them great opportunities. So it was kind of a mixture of all the things that I love that came together. And fast forward, you know, 4 years from there, we are now in seven different states, seven different locations across the U.S. And we place talent all across the U.S. for cannabis companies that, you know, that operate in all verticals.
You know, I have a question for you, because this is something that I thought about when I first joined Benzinga in March, was really when the economy got shaken up due to COVID. And I found that a lot of these cannabis companies were using COVID as sort of their, they were citing it as a reason to really let go of a lot of workers. Mm-hmm. But then our Javier and I have colleagues that wrote stories about other cannabis companies that were like, well, we're not letting go workers. We're hiring workers now, because cannabis businesses were deemed essential, and there were deliveries and drop-offs and other tasks that needed to be done on a regular basis. So there were a lot of there was an uptick in temp workers. Mm-hmm. What's your read of that time? Because it sounded like people were just sort of blaming the pandemic for their layoffs, but you know, it seemed like a lot of other companies were doing some hiring.
You know, I think initially everyone panicked, right? We didn't understand what was going to happen. And I think most companies said, okay, what can we do to conserve cash and to try to make it through this? But I think the exciting thing that happened is that cannabis was deemed essential. Yeah. And the demand increased almost overnight. You know, we had lines out of, you know, at dispensaries, and all of a sudden our clients had to adapt to, you know, deal with the increased demand. So a lot of our clients opted for doing temp staffing versus direct hire, because it is more flexible. It's easy. They don't have to deal with the payroll taxes, the workers' comp. And so that became sort of the go-to for a lot of cannabis companies that transitioned and had to pivot in the pandemic era.
Mm. Yeah, I think Tony made a very interesting point. I sometimes understood that certain companies were in fact forced to furlough or fire employees because of the pandemic, but many others, as Tony mentioned, seem to be using it as an excuse to justify what in fact had been coming up, you know, for a lot, you know, quite some time, you know, excessive spending or exuberant spending or overextension or whatever. Right. But you know, on temp jobs, I have a question in like kind of personal, but it's how do you ensure that you know, workers' rights are still in you know, to a certain extent respected, right? You know, how do you help a temp worker ensure that he's not treated as a second class worker, mm-hmm. right?
Good question.
You know, that's an interesting question, but I mean, I don't think we've ever had that situation with any of our clients. You know, all of our temp workers are our employees, and we care for them greatly. And we take very good care in where we place these temporary workers in different companies. So, you know, they need to get their breaks, they need to have a good working environment, and they need to be treated with respect and fairly. So we've only had really positive experiences with placing temp workers across the country. You know, we work with select cannabis companies, and you know, I think every temp that we've placed they're always super excited about going to work, and a lot of them end up being permanent employees after a few months. So it's an opportunity for them to also assess whether this is a company that they want to work for long term, and vice versa. So it's kind of a try before you buy, which most people don't have the option to do if you take a job, you know, sort of sight unseen. Yeah. So I think it's a win-win for both the client and the candidate.
Yeah, mm. A good point.
So we're at a time now where right now, this week, applications for unemployment benefits hit the lowest level since March. But there is still a lot of folks out there who are unemployed. I mean, the economy just took a hit, and we're still going to feel the ramifications of that. Oh, absolutely. What kind of jobs are out there in the cannabis space? What's like some of the positions that you see that need to be filled? Which are the ones that are, I don't know, the highest demand? And is there a trend of the new types of talent that are in demand?
You know, I think that the industry, you know, shifted slightly with the pandemic. But if you think about the industry as a whole, from the moment the seed gets planted to where it gets harvested and then, you know, gets extracted and it needs to be tested and manufactured into some sort of a product, it hits the retail shelf. It needs to be distributed maybe via our distribution channel. And then there's also C-suite roles. So the number of opportunities for jobs in the cannabis market are way more vast than most people understand. And, you know, there's a lot of people that can easily transition from other industries and be very effective and have a brand new career in the cannabis industry. So we place people, you know, in all verticals. But especially what we're seeing right now, you know, a lot of companies are pivoting to doing more e-commerce. So there's a lot of marketing, e-commerce, retail type roles open. Cultivation is becoming larger and larger. So larger scale cultivation, we're taking people from big ag and transferring them into the cannabis industry. And then obviously manufacturing, people that come from food and the wine industry are transitioning easily into the cannabis industry. Consumer packaged goods, biotech, pharma. So there's just so many more opportunities than most people realize to, you know, to make a shift and have a brand new career in this fantastic space.
Interesting. Yeah, I was talking to Josh Genderson over at Holistic at the recent Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference. And he made a point of how similar the wine and spirits industry is to mm-hmm. cannabis. Do you agree with that? He was like, absolutely. I have a background in wine and spirits, and it was really applicable to cannabis.
Absolutely. You know, because it's highly regulated as well, you know, so I definitely, we take a lot of people from, you know, the craft beer industry, the food, you know, and the food and wine industry, and they transition very easily into cannabis and bring a lot of expertise and new thought leadership, you know, to the industry, which is great.
If you'll humor me just for a second, I'm curious, you know, what are some of the stranger, more unexpected job offerings that you've seen in cannabis, right? Because when you tell people about cannabis, about the industry, about starting a business or investing, they imagine like just growing weed or you know, selling weed. And there's a lot more to it, right? From accounting, like, you know, we have a full team of people who work in cannabis initiatives, none of which grow cannabis at Benzinga, at least not professionally, you know?
Not on the roof either.
Yeah. So like, for those watching, like what were some of these jobs that one might not imagine exist and could be a good fit for them?
Yeah. You know, I think if anyone's curious about jobs in the cannabis industry, I would, you know, defer them to our salary guide. We released the second version of our salary guide about a month ago. And there's some great information in there. We've highlighted the 52 sort of most common jobs that we're placing in the industry. So that's a good segue into just seeing the different sectors in the industry. But, you know, we've taken people out of, you know, pharmaceutical companies that have run large scale manufacturing facilities and pharmaceuticals. And then now they're running big operations in cannabis extraction and manufacturing facilities. So they're transitioning really easily from those types of, types of roles. We've placed big CFOs that have come from, you know, beauty product environments, and now they run, you know, big verticals in the cannabis industry. So it really, you know, especially now cannabis is becoming more global, we're pulling a lot more from, you know, publicly traded companies that have a very broad reach and that are very sophisticated, and those people are adding a lot of value to companies that are growing fast.
I have a question about that salary guide. I think that's really cool. Is there anybody else in the industry putting together a comprehensive salary guide like that?
You know, I think we're the only one that's put together, you know, a salary guide to this extent. I think there are a couple of other versions of it out there as well.
Yeah.
But I think this is really valuable information because we don't not only look at just the jobs, we're looking also at the regions where you know, companies are hiring, and we've also indexed it for different states so that we can adjust for cost of living. So it is quite a useful tool for both of companies that are hiring and people looking to get into the industry.
So now, but it came out in January, February, something like that. Did it change at all after, you know, crap hit the fan in March and April and May?
It did, you know, and I think that's why we were so excited to release the second version of it, because we've actually seen an increase in salaries, an average between 10 and 15% increase in salaries in the industry. And I think it's because companies are now realizing that they need to get more sophisticated talent, and they're willing to pay for it to transition from other industries.
Our CEO is watching, so
yeah. Yeah, what's the average salary in cannabis? I'm asking for a friend, not me.
You know, that's a very, I can't answer that question. That's too broad because, we can anywhere from a trimmer, a buttender, you know, can make $35,000, and we've placed CFOs at $500,000. So there's a huge range of salaries in the industry.
I might become a buttender. What do you think, Javier? I might switch over. Leave.
We like you. We need you.
All right.
So from your September guide, right? Which states did you see on the rise? Right. Of course, there's the classics, right? Everyone thinks of cannabis. Yeah, California, Colorado. But, you know, which states are hiring now?
You know, Oklahoma is becoming, Oklahoma is a big state right now. There's a lot of developments in Oklahoma. Yeah, Massachusetts, again, all the states that are geared to go, you know, legal over the next couple of years, there's a lot of hiring already taking place there, Arizona. And obviously, New Jersey is just around the corner as well. So we're seeing a lot of uptake there. But, you know, that's really, whether it's CBD or THC, you know, regular cannabis, there's jobs almost in every single state. So, there's huge opportunity for people to enter the job market.
All right, we have a few minutes left. I want to give you a twofer. What's more exciting? What's the most exciting aspect of the industry for you going forward into 2021? And what's your advice to anybody looking for perhaps a gig or a career change and looking to the cannabis space and getting really excited at the ballot initiatives and the potential, and like you said, in those states like New Jersey and Massachusetts?
You know, I think the exciting thing, and especially over the last few months, I think people have started to realize that cannabis is here to stay. The stigma is gone. This is a legitimate industry. And we're seeing the second wave of people entering the job market in the cannabis industry. I think this is an opportunity also for some of the cannabis companies out there to upgrade their skill sets. You know, there's a huge labor pool out there, and there's now people that are willing to take the leap into the cannabis industry. So there's opportunities for people to enter in all different sectors of the market. I'm just super excited about the industry going forward because, you know, despite the fact that we've seen huge growth, we're still at an infancy. So there's so much opportunity for the industry to grow, but to become more sophisticated. And, you know, I think anyone that's looking for a new career change past COVID, why not look at the cannabis industry? Because there's, you know, so much, you know, going on.
Why not? Why, yes. I mean, I have a long list of reasons to look into it. So, hiring, by the way, if anyone is looking for a job, hit us up. Great place to work at.
You know, which place was it? Benzinga?
Sorry?
Which place is hiring?
Benzinga.
Oh, all right.
They're always hiring.
Yeah.
Hit us up. We have time for one more question, unfortunately. And you were talking about the future. You know, what kind of, like, what areas in cannabis do you see as potential hot areas post-pandemic, you know, for people considering a career change after all the craziness is?
Yeah.
Whenever that is.
More bud tenders, maybe, or more in the cultivation space? What?
You know, I think it's all across the board, because if you think about it, the industry cannot grow until, you know, unless we have growth in all verticals within the industry. So we're, again, cultivation is big, extraction is becoming more and more sophisticated. New product development is you know, always happening, and there's new things entering the market. But obviously retail, e-commerce is sort of going to be the next wave. And think about where this industry is going to go when it becomes descheduled. You know, I think the opportunity to then distribute across borders and to go global is the next step. So, you know, I think the world is ready for that. Really, really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, Liesl, thank you so much. I can't think of a better way to kick off this episode. You've been great.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me.
Before you go, just real quick, tell everybody how they can reach you and what they can look up.
Sure. Our website is cannabisteam.com. Cannabis with a Z, team.com. And our temp temp firm is Cannabis Temp. And you can reach me at Liesl@cannabisteam.com.
Simple enough. Thanks so much, Liesl.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Javier, plenty of jobs coming up.
Oh, man. What an exciting industry to be a part of.
Yeah. Depending on how this episode goes, I might just reach out to Liesl.
It'll go great.
Yeah.
You know, man, and if you're not a part of this industry, you're missing out.
You are missing out. It's a great industry. I was just telling someone that it's in the early stages where it has a chance to really do it right. Unlike, you know, Silicon Valley and the tech startups where, you know, there's like a toxic culture. Right now, the legal cannabis space has the chance to really do it right.
Yeah.
And so like Liesl said, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, please.
I was going to say, like Liesl said, there's a lot of opportunities in the extraction space. And lucky for us, we have an extraction specialist coming up on this show. I don't know if he's next.
Yeah. Is he ready? Yeah.
Is he ready?
Super early. Extremely diligent Nick Tennant from Precision Extractions joining us in 3, 2, 1. Yeah.
Ooh. That was a little quick. Oh. There it is. How are you guys?
Doing great. What about you?
Doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Nick, I'm digging the artwork behind you. What's going on back there? What is that?
Thank you. Yeah, everything in my house is very modern, very minimalistic. It's kind of a transitional home, but yeah, I like to keep things clean. And as you can see, I like the blacks and grays also.
Yeah. And that unlike us, I like things messy and disorganized. That's me.
Never.
Very wabi-sabi. The opposite of Nick Tennant. Well, thank you for coming on the show. We have a lot of questions for you. Javier, you want to tee off?
I mean, yeah, just tell us a little bit about you and what to do at Precision Extractions. You know, I know you're a big player in the game, and a lot of big boys in the industry use your services and products. So
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in the cannabis space now for 17 years. And about 7 years ago, I founded Precision Extraction. And really, I did that because I saw the niche coming to all extracted products. And when you looked at 7 years ago, say the Pacific Northwest or the California or Colorado early entrant markets, you saw all those markets, the sales trend and the consumer base trend moving towards extracted products. And then of course you saw extraction or extracted based products in parallel industries like botanicals, like food flavorings and things like that, all have a absolutely huge industry. So I kind of looked at the technology that was working at the time for the extraction space. It was pretty much non-existent. And the companies that were around back then, or most of them aren't even around today. So we developed our first platform. We founded the company. And in 2014, we did over $1 million in sales in our first 90 days. So since then, we've transformed into an organization of 60 people. We've done about 1,500 installs. As you guys pointed out, Javier, we have probably the most robust client base of probably any cannabis services or equipment company in the industry. And mm-hmm. some of those big names that you would know, like Ascend, like Afria, and these big companies, and I can say them because we've
had— You can name drop, you can name drop, Nick, that's good.
Yeah.
Curaleaf, well, I mean, Grassroots, I'll do it for you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a big list. I mean, if you know their brand, more than likely we're doing business.
Okay.
We'll just put it that way for the short.
Before we move on, I need to know, you said 17 years in the cannabis industry. Like what were you doing? Like this was really.
So I know I don't look it. Somehow I've been blessed with amazing genetics from what I have been told, but I'm 36 now. So that puts me, you know, in the industry when I was 19. And basically I had family in Colorado and California all the way back to Michigan's law passed in 2008, which now is, you know, about what, 12 years ago, give or take. So even before then, you know, we were involved through Colorado and California in those early entrant markets. So I've served in all sorts of roles, whether it's cultivation, retail, product production, anything that you can pretty much think of in cannabis I've done, but spent the last 7 years of my career exclusively focused on extraction.
Excellent. So no other career choice for you, man. I mean, since 19 years old, were you ever like tempted to be like, today I'm going to go into movies or something?
there's been some ideas that came my way, but I always believed in cannabis, both from a medicinal standpoint, its ability to treat, cure, and aid in human disease and condition. And I also believed in, you know, adults for use to use it recreationally for relaxation or whatever you want to categorize.
Yeah. But what do you said there was like a family affair. So was it like the family kind of, because I grew up in a family complete opposite, like, you know, weed is bad, don't even think about it. But now it's like the culture has changed because now that the, you know, the stigma is no longer there.
The famous no tokes.
Yeah. No tokes. You can't even joke about it. So even if you're singing the Stephen Miller song, that's it.
The family was in Colorado and California. It was my cousins and they had been working in the industry. And I've been kind of dipping my big toe and so forth. And they've been telling me things and going back and forth and traveling and visiting and doing a thing here and there. And really got really deep into it into 2007 when we knew the law was going to pass in Michigan. So I was the 40th person licensed in the state of Michigan under the medical law.
Interesting.
And we went gangbusters from there, you know, all in.
Yeah. So you're in Troy, Michigan, right? I mean, I asked because Benzinga is based in Detroit, where we are very much representative of Michigan. My number is a 313. You know, I live in RTM. My phone number is a 313.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So our headquarters is in Troy.
Do tell, why Troy? Why Michigan? What do you see there?
Well, most of our staff is Michigan natives, number one, and that's where we founded the company. And what we found is it was very easy for us to grow in this region. So when you think of Michigan, you think of Midwest, and you particularly think of the Metro Detroit region, you think of the amount of resources that we have in terms of manufacturing, building things, right? That's what we do in Detroit. We build things. So extraction equipment, I guess, is not drastically indifferent from a business model standpoint than cars or automotive, right? You have supply chain, you have manufacturers, you have subcontractors, you have all these things that you need to manage. So the talent was really able to be sourced pretty easily, put into our organization, and then really growing that business at a very high rate, high scale rate. Our average CAGR since we started the company has been about 90% CAGR year over year. So it's been crazy, you know, but being in Detroit, that talent is right there. I mean, we put a resume out for an engineer, we get 130 applications within, you know, a week. So it's a fantastic place to be for our business.
It is.
Well, extraction products are popular, right?
Yeah.
What was it? Something like 62% of retail sales for cannabis are extracted products.
Yeah. So yeah, I talk about this topic a lot. And I think that the whole thesis or the whole premises here is that as markets become more educated and consumers become more educated, so both from a production side through companies like ourselves that are allowing these large vertically integrated companies to make these novel extracted products, whether that's water hash or shatter, butter, sauce, any sorts of cryo sifts that we're working on now with our new series, these novel products become manufactured and then they become known by the consumer base. Ultimately, what that does is it catalyzes a shift in the consumer trends. And when that consumer trend shifts towards extracted products, the ultimate end result is the BDS data and things that you guys are seeing. But from a fundamental standpoint, it all starts with the consumer. And it's how do you get the consumer a better, cleaner, more enjoyable, easy to use product? And ultimately, if you do that, if you give them, we won't really necessarily call it a better mousetrap, but I'll just say it. If you give them a better way to consume, then they're ultimately going to gravitate towards that. And the fundamentals of putting cannabinoids in your body, using the plant as a medicine or recreationally, when done from an extracted products or an extracted products basis, those fundamentals are always going to outweigh smoking flower, right? Now, there's a lot of traditionalists, very close friends, myself, a lot of people love flower, and there's nothing wrong with the natural aspects
Something
of the flower.
Something tells me I think Javier is a traditionalist.
Yeah, 100%. And I totally get it. I totally get it, right? The unadulterated essence of the plant. But what you'll find is you can do the same thing and carry over that terpenoid profile generally with extracts now, with extracts. And if you want to do a solventless, you can do a solventless. You know, for example, you know, my dad, he won't smoke a joint, but he'll eat a 5 milligram gummy before bed to make him sleep because he doesn't want to stink up his whole house. And you know, all these different types of scenarios. So I think if you give the consumer a better delivery system, which is what extraction does, ultimately they'll gravitate towards that. And it's reflected, as I said, in the data.
Well, we got a question from the chat, Javier. Sure. Are you aware of this? We got a question right here. How is the FSMA/FDA regulation going to affect extraction and the ROI on equipment?
Sure. Yeah. So,
it was a specific question.
Very specific.
It's actually great. I love it. I talk about this stuff all the time. So, what we're moving towards inevitably for manufacturing and for agricultural production for that matter, but we'll focus on manufacturing for a minute. So manufacturing is what we call CGMP, and that stands for current GMP. And this is the same standard that basically most supplements are made to. And if you take it one standard up, which is the pharma GMP, that's what pharmaceuticals are made to. Now, it's not gonna be a lot of instances where people are, for example, injecting something that's cannabinoid derived or putting it in their eye like a dropper or something like that. But what there will be is regulation surrounding the production methodologies of these cannabis products. And the easiest way to kind of understand this is ultimately you have an end user. So if Javier is going to consume a cannabis product and let's say, God forbid, it makes him sick. Okay. When it's a CGMP product, we can take the barcode off of that or the stamp and we can trace that all the way back to the time that that product was a seed, okay, all the way through good agricultural practices. And what we'll then know is we'll know every single thing that touched that supply chain to the point where you made that product. So was it a bad gasket in equipment? Was it a pesticide that was sprayed on there? Was it something that the farmer cross-contaminated when he harvested? So on down the road. Now, this is a set of standards that is used already by the FDA, it's already used by supplement manufacturers, it's already used by pharmaceutical manufacturers. This set of standards, when we have federal legalization, will come into play. So the second half of that question is, how will that affect extraction equipment ROI? So inevitably, the price of cGMP manufacturing goes up a little bit. There's a higher CapEx to it. Because you're operating in things like ISO 4 and ISO 8 clean rooms, which means you can only have so many particulates floating around in the air, your people have to go through blowdown rooms, they have to gown, you know, they have to change gloves. There's all these types of cleanliness standards.
Yeah.
Because you have to invest into that infrastructure, that CapEx is inevitably higher and your ROI becomes compressed somewhat, but it's not six orders of magnitude like you think it would be. It's maybe 1.5 to 2 orders of magnitude. So because you're outfitting a facility and the equipment to cGMP standards, it's maybe, again, 150, 200% the price, but it's not going to be 6-7 times the price. So from an ROI perspective, because the ROI on extraction equipment and extracted derived products is already so accretive, I mean, the ROI on some extraction equipment can be 10 days, 2 weeks, right? When you look at a parallel industry, food manufacturing or something, it can be years, or at least if nothing else, 12, 18 months. So it's not going to be drastically impactful from an ROI standpoint. And companies like ours are already prepared for this. Our newest line of equipment, like the XMU that we're currently launching, is already made and meets cGMP standards. And some of our equipment, like our C-series centrifuge extraction equipment, already meets cGMP and is moving towards pharma standards very rapidly. Mm-hmm. So all of these standards will come into play. And I think that you'll see them in the next 24 months be cast upon the entire industry.
Mm-hmm. So since we're talking, you know, about very business specific topics in this case, what would you recommend to someone looking to set up some kind of extraction lab or extraction facility, whether it's in the US or abroad, right? What are the key considerations? What are the, you know, the main things to know, the do's and don'ts here?
Sure. Yeah. The easy part is you can just call us and we'll walk you through everything. So if you want the easy answer, that's it. The more complicated answer is market assessment dynamics. Really having a strategic product plan, understanding what products you're going to make, why you're going to make them, and understanding your production and supply chain the whole way through. So the methodology and the strategic ability to create a cultivation site for water hash is going to be different than live resin. It's going to be different than going to flower. Maybe you're putting part of your room to live resin. Maybe you're putting part of your room to flower. How is the consumer dynamics that we just previously described going to shift both in the short term and the long term in your region? And how are you going to stay product competitive? So these are all things that are critical questions that need to be answered. And because not only our business development team, myself, our technical specialists, you know, we've all been in the game for 7 to 10 years, most everybody in our company at a minimum. So we understand not only how to manufacture these products, but how to prepare the biomass, how to prepare the cultivation, what products are going to be relevant in early entrant markets like Oklahoma versus what products are going to be competitive and relevant in mature markets like Southern California. Mm-hmm. You have two different dynamics going there. Furthermore, it's more compounded even because you have different laws in terms of plant count, cultivation sites, cost that you have to put in terms of CapEx, right? So this all has to be planned out. And, you know, very much of our sales process for Precision is a consultative sales process, meaning these are the types of critical questions that we ask our client base and make recommendations based upon our expertise.
Well, I think we have time for one more question, Nick. And I want to say it's, well, it stems from what you said back at the Benzinga Virtual Cannabis Capital Conference. And you mentioned you're still bullish on the cannabis market and its future. And you said, if there's any business to be in right now, it's obviously the cannabis space. There's nothing that's going to stop or inhibit the cannabis industry. Why? Why is your sentiment on the industry this high?
And well, I mean,
you to be.
Look, we have changing social construct surrounding how people interpret cannabis. People are realizing that, you know, the 1930s type of fear factor doesn't really work anymore with cannabis.
Reefer madness.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to pull it back to that, but I didn't want to name that specifically. But it's really the social.
I know, it's such a cliche. I'm right? Cliche. It's all right.
I mean, you have to think about it. Like, is anybody ever really going to go in and be against cannabis in the next 10 years strongly. I just don't see that happening. I don't see it happening. I don't see a resurgence in this conservative type of view surrounding cannabis. And I do see it as a massive catalyst for the economy. So even people who are conservative, they love jobs. And cannabis is creating a lot of jobs, number one. Number two, the social construct surrounding it is not just national, it's global. You have an aging demographic. The younger people are obviously more liberal in their opinion towards the consumption of cannabis. So you have that demographic change. And if you kind of read books like Neil Howe's Fourth Turning or something like that, it illustrates how these demographic changes change public opinion and shift trends in certain industries. And I think that that's very applicable in our particular instance. So the other thing is, historically, you know, we've got a 40% CAGR year over year, and we've hit it every year. We've got four states coming to complete legalization in this election cycle. I mean, that's huge. You have a 750 million person market in the EU that hasn't even begun to catalyze in any sort of appreciable manner. So all of these things together is a great reason why it's awesome to be in the cannabis space. And we as an organization are levering up. We're doing a Series B right now. And if there's anybody that's watching that wants more information, you can send me an email. It's nickt@precisionextraction.com. or just contact our company. But we're levering up. We're doubling down our bet. We're putting more resources into the industry. We're expanding and we're garnering more clients as a result of that. So again, putting my money where my mouth is.
Are you breaking news there? Are you telling folks that you're out there on the hunt for venture capital? I haven't seen that anywhere.
Yeah, we're having many conversations. This is really the first public disclosure. I talked about it with our management team and our board. We are out there right now, currently seeking around. We're talking to a few different people right now, but early discussions. So we would absolutely welcome anybody that wanted to talk. And obviously we're well prepared, as we are in all things that we do.
Are you able to disclose what the target is, or are you too tight-lipped on that?
The offering.
Yeah, you know, our minimum target is going to be around $10 million for a raise. So if we're not there, and there's levers that we can pull to do more, I won't give too many details around that, but that's right around where our target is.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sorry, Javier, go ahead. I think you.
I was just wondering, the valuation, is it something that, like, at what valuation you're raising, or is it something?
Yeah. So we've got prior round valuations, and we've had term sheets thrown at us and all sorts of other stuff, but that's not something I can talk about today.
Wow. Sorry. We'll follow up. You be ready.
Yep. Okay. Fantastic.
I think that about wraps it up, man. It's a good place to leave it. If investors out there watching this show, reach out to Nick.
I'm all ears.
Nick T.
Yeah. If I can I drop it in the chat here? Is that most advantageous?
Sure, why not?
Let's see. Let's send it to all the attendees. There's the website and my email. And obviously you can go to precisionextraction.com. Pretty straightforward. The logo's right there, and you can find us pretty easy. Find Excellent. Me on LinkedIn too.
All right, man. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Wow, after seeing Nick at 36 years old with clear skin like that, I got to invest in some, creamers or something. I'm 34 and I look like I'm 6 years older than him.
You don't. I completely, you know, resigned to not looking as sharp as you did. I know you always have your perfect hair. And I was like,
talking about you said you were 30 before. You look younger than 30, man.
I try. So one of the things that's funny, here's a funny little tidbit. Since I first started going to cannabis conferences in 2014, I always wear a suit and a tie and a shirt, and many people don't. And, yeah. You know, people are often surprised, especially when I was this random Latino showing up in a suit. And people always said, you look dapper. And I didn't know what it meant. And I thought they were telling me I look dabber, like, you know, on dab, like, you're stoned out of your mind. I'm like, no, man, it's like 9:30 a.m. I'm not stoned out of my mind. I was always offended.
You gotta look. You gotta look sharp. I like that. You look dapper.
Dapper. I didn't know that was a word.
All right. Well, let's see if our next guest is dapper or a dabber. Who knows? It could be both.
I'm craving anything right now after our last conversation. I'm actually craving some bubble hash. I said I like flowers, but bubble hash is
nice. What about peppermint patties? I was a big fan of those for a while.
What about you, Sky?
Yeah, Sky Pinnick on the show. Welcome, Sky. What do you prefer?
Thanks for having me, guys. Hey, anything that makes me look dapper, I think, is...
Talk about artwork. We had a guest with minimalist artwork in the last, Nick, you know, didn't really, you know, black and white, plain artwork. Look at the artwork behind Sky.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah, I like a little color pop there.
Yeah.
Nick had a great backdrop, man. I love the little fireside chat going on there.
Yeah, it was cool.
It's really Tony who has a fire, like the actual fire on.
Yeah. Not today. I reserved those for the conference.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
These I'm trying to, the books I have are below here. So that's the funny thing about the Zoom meetings that we all have now in the pandemic. You get to see what books everybody has on their bookshelf because everybody has that as the backdrop, like Javier right there, the cannabis cocktails.
Photography. I can see that there's a bunch of analog.
Yeah, you can see maybe that's my background and forte.
What's your favorite?
Photography.
What's your favorite?
What camera or? Yeah. You know, the one sitting on top of the speaker back there might be my favorite. It's a Mamiya. It's an old Japanese medium format camera. Produces amazing images.
Awesome. I go to the Nikon F2. My father gave it to me from the 70s. It weighs like a ton.
Ah, that's great.
And it's traveled with me everywhere around the world. I cannot leave it. You know.
Oh, that's awesome. Thing.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and you post some nice photos with that Nikon, Javier, on your Instagram.
We do enjoy it. I mean, just I randomly go up to people on the street that before COVID, of course, just tell them like, "Hey, I want to take a picture of you. Like, what do you think?" And the people tend to agree.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's a different world now, man. Everyone has their, you know, their face masks on and are hidden, and it's a mysterious new world we live in.
Yeah. As would welcome a stranger approaching me right now, you know, just like, "Hey, can I take a camera?" No, just stay away, please.
Well, that's a good transition right there, because the world is a sea of crazy. And obviously we're still, people say we're ready for another phase of COVID cases, but I still feel like we're in the first phase. Like it just kept getting worse. So how has COVID-19 shifted your priorities, Sky? I mean, give us an idea, a snapshot as how 2020 has been for you.
Oh man, 2020 has been the roller coaster ride that probably everyone has commented on in every podcast and interview and everything else over the world.
But it's something that's uniting all of us. So I don't think anybody's getting tired of it. I feel like it's the one thing that's really bonding all of us. We're all in this crap storm together.
It is. I think that is a really fascinating point because it is a global pandemic. We are literally, you know, sharing the same sort of experiences with, you know, people in France or Italy or Argentina, you know, all over the world, we're all bonded together now by this. And so to that end, it is kind of a cool, I guess if nothing's cool about COVID, but if there's a silver lining, it is that it's bringing together sort of this unification across the
You're
world.
Optimistic. You're definitely an optimist.
I try to be.
On that optimistic tone, what are you feeling optimistic about regarding C21 investments? And by the way, tell us a little bit about what you do, like, you know, a 1 minute elevator pitch, if you will.
The 1 minute elevator pitch. So C21 investments is basically, it's just a vertically integrated cannabis company. We're technically an MSO. We've got operations in Oregon and Nevada. You know, we cultivate, we extract, we have branded CPG, we have wholesale, but sort of the gem of it all is our retail in Northern Nevada called Silver State Relief. And that's kind of the engine, if you will, behind C21. And you know, we're happy to say that we're one of the more profitable companies in the cannabis or in the public cannabis sector. So that's you know, the result of a lot of hard work from our team. And you know, we've kind of been focused on building this self-sustaining foundation that is ready to sort of replicate and scale as we progress here.
So our colleague, Yelena Martinovic, wrote a little bit about you guys joining the OTC last month. How did that go?
Yeah, that was cool. It was, you know, an upgrade to the QX. And so that was, you know, it just provides more access to, you know, especially to the US based investors, and it provides us a little more exposure and a little more fluidity for shareholders to get involved.
Did you guys have that plan like in the works before COVID, or was the process delayed at all? Or was it just right on time?
You know, everything is always delayed. Yeah. I don't care what plan you have. It's always delayed. We're suffering that right now on a couple occasions internally at C21. That's been a little challenging, but it's just part of the process. And I think COVID has just exacerbated some of these, these different processes, but, you know, everyone has been super accommodating and helpful. And I think, you know, again, we're all in this together. So people get it. People understand that, you know, we're doing these conferences virtually now, we're doing meetings virtually, we're sort of reshifting what the new normal is. Yeah. And part of that recalibration is, I think, you know, people's expectations are being recalibrated and so on and so forth. So.
Yeah. And you were talking about the unavoidable delays in the cannabis industry. Last year, I was speaking at this conference in Jamaica, and someone, a local, said, "You chill out, we're in marijuana minutes." And now every time someone gets a little bit impatient about, you know, regulations or licensing or whatever, it's like, just chill out, we're in marijuana minutes, you know?
That's right.
Everything takes 10 times more, and you need to be able to understand that and adjust. So for anyone getting into the industry, right, what are like your key pieces of advice regarding navigating these delays, the uncertainty, right? Like, how do you handle it as, you know, as a company and personally, right? Because it's stressful.
Oh yeah. I mean, great question, Javier. I think that's a really good thing for people to sort of think about as they're entering the cannabis space, either as a professional, as a worker, as a entrepreneur, or even as a shareholder, as an investor. You have to understand that this is a highly regulated industry that's nascent. So we are literally blazing the trail as we go. The collective industry. And so, you know, I think it's easy to sit, you know, at a boardroom and spew out all these great ideas and come up with how you want to conquer the world and expand over here and do this and do that. And then the reality sets in, which is, you know, licensing and transfers and all these things just take an exorbitant amount of time. And yeah. So I think, you know, for people entering into the space in all of those categories that I mentioned, you just really have to have this like reminder that things are going to take just a little bit longer. It's going to go a little bit slower, and there's going to be plenty of hurdles that pop up along the way.
Yeah. I think don't
let that bog you down. I mean, it's part of the process. It's literally blazing the trail. I mean, if you have the right mentality.
Yeah. And we're all going to get there, right? But things do slow down. That's another thing that we all have in common in 2020. It's like, we're all on delay, but you guys made some progress in certain markets. I want to talk a little bit about your strategy in Nevada. I know that your locations are not in Vegas and the focus is on other localities. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that is kind of I think is one of the interesting things about the dynamic of our company is that, you know, I think when anyone thinks about the state of Nevada, they immediately, their head thinks of Las Vegas because it's obviously the economic generator.
Viva Las Vegas, man.
Exactly.
That's all I know about Nevada.
Right. I mean, we've all been to the conference there. It's, you know, it's the hub of energy in Nevada. But, you know, what people tend to sort of glaze over is that up in Northern Nevada in the Reno area, there's a thriving, you know, community there, and business community, and plenty of people. There's casinos, tourism, et cetera, et cetera. It's close to Lake Tahoe, all these things. And so it's a rich place to do business. And so what we've done there is we've built two dispensaries in Northern Nevada that service sort of, you know, like what I like to say is, you know, we're not tourist targeted. We're a store for everybody. And I think that's kind of evident in our customer transactions and sort of the adoption rate of which people are engaging in our dispensaries there. Mm-hmm. Which is an exceptional amount of people. I think I just saw a stat come through a few days ago.
Yeah.
That we did over 10,000 curbside deliveries last month.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think I hope somebody could fact check me on this. I think our colleague, I'm mentioning her again because she does some great coverage for us, is Yelena spoke with Planet 13. Mm-hmm. And they said that sales went up in Nevada despite the hit that tourism took. Can you talk a little bit about that and just how
that was crazy?
Chunk of tourism just disappeared, but sales are continuing to climb.
Yeah, and I think you know, in a place like Las Vegas, where Planet 13 is, you know, has a beautiful store and an amazing operation, I think, you know, the tourism variable is a huge component there. So it was, you know, exciting and relieving to see that, you know, they've weathered that storm and are performing well. And, you know, I think the interesting thing for Silver State Relief and outside of Reno is that the tourism variable is much smaller. And so we didn't have the threat of that slowdown, and thusly we didn't also, you know, see a slowdown. So, I mean, we're literally servicing customers the same way we have been the all the way through, albeit we've had to pivot with all the state mandated changes. We have to, you know, I think we changed our business like four times in the course of, you know, between sort of March and April, where it went from, you know, in-store only, to delivery plus curbside, to delivery plus curbside plus delivery. And so we just sort of pivoted to, you know, to adopt to the rules. But for the most part, so yes, there were absolute hurdles in all of that, but for the most part, it didn't, COVID hasn't had a tremendous negative effect on what our business is in Nevada.
What about the fires?
Yeah. The fire, man.
Because it wasn't just COVID this year. We couldn't just have COVID. We needed UFOs, we needed murder hornets, and we needed fires too.
I have a theory. It's the world just telling people to stay inside. You know, people were not doing their quarantines and stuff, and they were like, you know what? This now.
I know. Well, hey, despite COVID and all the other uncertainty, the wildfires have been horrible. I'll talk about that in a second, but let's, for just one second, murder hornets, that's like the freakiest thing maybe of the three. And but you come all together, and I think you're summing up 2020.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Exactly.
And it was us all along.
It was our fault.
I knew we shouldn't have brought those murder hornets in test tubes.
Yeah.
But no, the fires, great question. Cause you know, I think a lot of the world actually saw the effect of the wildfires. Cause I know that the smoke was like crossing the Atlantic and stuff, but man, it was an incredibly scary and dangerous time in the West. I mean, California was ravaged. Oregon was absolutely ravaged. There's just so much devastation and loss and, you know, hardship. And I mean, I don't even think we even know the full impact yet. Sort of globally speaking, but as it pertains to the cannabis industry and specifically our business, we have our big outdoor farm is smack dab in the middle of what was one of the bigger fires in Oregon. It just exploded like literally overnight. And, you know, I think Sonny Newman, our CEO, said it good, that the canna gods were looking upon us throughout that time. We were one of the few and fortunate farms in sort of this geographic area that was literally spared. And when I say spared, I mean the fire burned the entire surrounding property. We're on about 70 acres and it's wooded. It's just this beautiful, beautiful location. And the fire burned the majority of the property all the way right up to the border of the grow, like literally to the fence, and actually in some cases burned the fence, but didn't. We've spent a lot of time and energy, you know, creating defensible space and sort of following the Forest Service's guides towards, you know, fire safety and maintenance.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, it is a lot of hard, backbreaking work, and kudos to our team for sweating and toiling, you know, doing all this preventatively over the years, but it really paid off because the fire just, it literally, I think if you went up in space and looked down on our grow, it would look like a chocolate donut with a green center.
And oh my God. That's farm. like, that's like divine intervention.
It, it,
Like the gun scene in Pulp, well, one of the gun scenes in Pulp Fiction where he was like, they should have been killed.
Right.
But for some reason it missed them. Yeah. Hey,
yeah.
That's you guys. You guys are like that, but with the fires.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're just like, you know, thanking everything that exists for that. And it was, I tell you what, it was touch and go. We were, because, you know, it was all restricted access.
Yeah.
And so no one was allowed. Like, you know, the National Guard was in there blocking the roads, et cetera, et cetera. So we were literally watching the play-by-play on our security system. And you could just see the fire coming over the hills, getting closer and closer and closer. And then guess what? All the cameras went out. Because the power went out.
You know,
yeah, just man, it was so. And I think it was maybe 2 or 3 days until we actually gained access to go back up there and check on it. And that's when we learned that, like, by the grace of some all being power, we were spared. And there it was, our farm was there. It didn't even burn greenhouses. It spared sort of everything that was within the lush green area.
Yeah.
Garden. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, you guys can't go anywhere. You guys have to have success after this.
I know. We're counting our blessings for sure.
For sure. I'm sorry, Javier, go ahead.
This reminds me of that Simpsons episode when Homer falls asleep and his house catches on fire. And at one point he says, like, look, Flanders, this house is also on fire. And a little cloud just comes over and starts with like just breaks some rain. And fire out. It's like, you have some good karma, you know, saved up. Yeah. So we have 1 minute left of the show.
Yeah.
You're a publicly traded company. Anyone can buy your stock. So tell us the ticker, and you have like 30 seconds to pump up investors. Why should we be excited about your future?
Man, I think we're the little known secret tucked away in Nevada right now. We've got a lot of growth potential. We've been focused for the last year, fine tuning our machine. We're now ready to look towards the horizon and how to grow. Our stock ticker is CXXI or CXXIF and C21 Investments. Thanks for having me.
You got lucky with the ticker too. Like, you know, a ticker that makes sense.
Right.
It's super hard to come by. You see a lot of people with random tickers. Like, yeah, well, we were taken, you know?
Right. Well, and it's the Roman numerals, right? So it's C21, yeah. So kind of
all quiet. Right, man. Well, sky's the limit for Sky, right?
Hey, man, I think so.
I don't know. It's kind of cheesy, but it was the first thing that came to my head to close out the show.
I love it.
Thank you, Sky, for joining us. You've been a great guest. We appreciate all that you do, and congratulations on well, not getting burned, literally.
So. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, we'll come back again.
I will, absolutely.
Yeah. Choice your cameras next time. I want one. You know, you have to pick one and just showcase it.
So are you going out at all with your camera, your Nikon, Javier, this weekend?
Not really. I mean, there's not a lot I can photograph right now and not a lot of places to go down here, to be honest. But it's one of the few things that I'm really looking forward to, you know, in relation to going back to travel. I used to spend 15 days of every month traveling pre-COVID, like before COVID. And now it's been 9 months of no travel, and it's been great because I got to rest and got to do stuff and build, you know, and help grow Benzinga and launch new initiatives like Oplantia. We've had time to do actual stuff and not just, you know, gallivant around the world. But you know, that's one of the like few things that I really, really, really miss. It's just being in other places where people look different to what I'm used to and just photograph them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody's trapped inside, right? Like hardly anybody's going anywhere. So until we can, we're all going to look forward to traveling. But if you're trapped inside, you might as well click on the laptop or your phone and read Benzinga.com and follow us on social media, right? We were told to plug social media at BZ Cannabis. We have an Instagram page now. With some great links to articles that we write by Javier, by myself, and Yelena Martinovic, our reporter. What else? Oh, we also have, I'm reminded to tell everyone that we next week, you can tune in again, same Benzinga YouTube time and channel. But also stick around after next week's episode for a special election edition.
So we have a double episode. So remember, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and going on for 2 hours, you have three guests and then a panel with the craziest, most relevant people in the cannabis industry, the movers and shakers.
I'm flattered, man. I'm going to be on that panel.
You know, yeah, man.
I'm relevant.
Interesting. I cannot wait to watch that. I will, you know, finish work early that day and just, you know, pack my coffee table with popcorn and cheese and whatever.
Well, depending on how angry I get tonight. I'm going to have a lot to say next week. So people should stick around after the BZ Cannabis Hour and talk politics, because why not? Sports aren't that exciting these days. So you might as well hang out and send us your questions and tune in. And until then, Javier, I bid you a farewell. I'll talk to you later tonight or tomorrow morning.
It's been great. See you next week.
Sure, we have 30 seconds to tell you that drivers who switch to Progressive could save big. But then what? We could romance the legal copy. It never gets the attention it deserves. And some lawyer worked real hard on it. So take it away, lawyer.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National annual average insurance savings by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive in 2020. Potential savings will vary.
Now that was some beautiful legal. Well done, lawyer. Well done.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.